One of the lessons we learned in Syria is if you want to win a war, you must have a lot of patience. So you also have patience. I was very patient. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيد الأنبياء والمرسلين وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد كما صليت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم إنك حميد مجيد اللهم ألهمنا مراشد أمورنا وأعيذنا من شرور أنفسنا. As he mentioned, this is a Karguzari. I don't know if you saw the poster, but on the poster that Karguzari word was written so scary that I had to look a couple of times to say, what's the topic? So same like that in Syria when we went. You will think from far, it's a very scary thing to go in a land that just came out of war. It just came out of war, but actually the war is not finished. The war has practically, what they say, just started. They are still surrounded by enemy from all sides, the same enemy. The enemy were never defeated. They only pull back. The one enemy that they managed to defeat was the Syrian regime that was never a power. The ones that were always against them, Russia, Israel, Iran, Iraq, Lebanon, ISIS from within, all of that is still there. And the Syrian regime, which is known as Alawi, they're also there. So you would think when you're entering into Syria, it's dangerous. You can get bombed from any side. The first day when we reached, the person who took us from the airport to the hotel told us, I'll meet you after a while. We wanted to go for Jummah. We walked alone. You ask someone, where's the masjid? Why I'm mentioning this to you is to explain that it is nothing hard to go and visit Syria. It is nothing hard. You can go, you can take your wife, you can take your children. It is a country which has total, total peace. So it's not something that you need a group to take you, you'll get locked up. This is a land. The land of Syria is practically the main part of what is known as the land of Sham. It is in this land that Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, the pillars of Islam Allah has placed in this land. An indication has been made in the narrations that the next hijrah, first hijrah was Medina Munawwara, the second hijrah is to the lands of Sham. In our journey there we saw people who made hijrah, they even called muhajirs. They made hijrah from Germany, Punjab, Qatar, Saudi Arabia. They made a hijrah where they sometimes left families who were billionaires. Sometimes their father would not speak to them, the mother would speak to them. Sometimes the mother would not speak, the father and brothers were speaking. You come home, say, I'm not coming. They left palaces, they left nice houses to come and live in a place where you're getting bombed. And if you had to ask them, what made you make this hijrah? Because even if you win the war, you are not a Syrian. You would there in that land see a man who made hijrah. That he left his land looking for a land of Islam. You will hear of people having dreams. Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam in the dream saying, you are a teacher. I want you to come and teach the children of Sham. And they'll point to a certain place and the person wakes up, then they'll make some investigation. And then suddenly the family look the next day gone. That person has left his entire what is called a top lifestyle on one dream and he has made a journey to the lands of Syria. So I will mention to you like how a Karguzari is, whatever comes, we reached, what happened on the first day, second day, lessons we took. But the purpose of the thing is, may Allah Tawarakala make it all of us are able to go see that land. These are people who made hijrah to the land at the time when there was war. Me and you can visit the land at the time when it is aman. Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam's wording, إِذَا فَسَدَ أَحْلُ الشَّامِ When the people of Sham will get corrupted, then there will be no goodness for you, meaning in the world. No goodness. The corruption in the land of Sham settled when the Khilafat was destroyed. At that time, in Sham, Syria, Jordan, Palestine, good leaders were removed and liars were brought into power. So focusing on Syria itself, a family by the name of Hafiz al-Assad, he was put as the leader of this land. The military was with him. We won't understand what an Alawi is. But think of a person who looks at me as a killer of Hussein radiallahu anhu. So I don't even know about the Shahada. They call it Karbala. They say what happened at Karbala. But that happened years ago, 1400 years. I was not there. But for that Alawi, I'm the killer. Because I'm the killer, for him to kill me is the closest way he can become the beloved of Allah. That's what an Alawi is. So for him to kill me or a woman, or to take a knife and to slit a stomach, especially when you see a pregnant woman, it's not like, what did you do? It's like, well done. If this is an Alawi, you can understand from the time Hafiz al-Assad took over, how many hundreds of thousands of good people must have been killed already. Today they are finding those mass graves. So that was at that time. The entire Sham became corrupted. Corrupted means that you don't talk of Quran and Hadith in Sham, in Syria. We visited a school, we saw the library of the school, no musalla. In a Muslim land, a school supposed to have one musalla. Music room there was, but no musalla. In the library we went through the books. How in our Muslim library you will have Quran and you will have the books of Ahadith. In their library you will have Hakadha Qal Hafiz al-Assad. That's the name of the book. That Hafiz al-Assad said this. Then you will have a book, the Ahadith of Hafiz al-Assad. The Khutubat of Hafiz al-Assad. Everything Hafiz al-Assad. His picture and his son Bashar al-Assad. His picture and his son. The person showing us the school said that school was established by Hafiz al-Assad and then Bashar al-Assad took it further. For those that would fight in the war for them. So in the war against Lebanon, many of the Sunni people also fought, meaning the Ahl Sunnah. So this person's father was injured, so he was allowed to be in the school. The teachers in the school would speak about Hafiz al-Assad so much, like a Nabi he was, like the Allah, God. So he says, my friend in the school, he became so upset with this Hafiz al-Assad, he just tore his picture. He said, it was not long after that, that the, whatever they call the secret police walked into the class. Meaning the teacher somehow sends a message, a small child. He says, they just take him out. He says, for 3 months my friend never returned to school. 3 months. After he returned, he never again spoke bad of Hafiz al-Assad. That child, what torture he must have gone through. Because he just tore that picture. You would meet an imam who would say, I was allowed to be an imam. As long as when we make dua, you must make dua for Hafiz al-Assad who's dead, Bashar al-Assad. And all your murids, all the musallis, they have murids, they are sheikh, he got his murids. Everyone must say, Ameen, Ameen, Ameen. He says, and if one person doesn't say Ameen, there will be definitely a spy in that place to say, I did not notice him saying Ameen. So every salah you must say your army. Even if you don't want to army. And if that spy picks you up, you never said your game is finished. We met 3 Tunisians. They came for the war. They came over the Turkish borders. They had made contracts with certain smugglers. At the beginning you had to know which smuggler you can trust, which one you can't. They got the wrong one. So that smuggler took their money, and as soon as they entered the country, sold them. Sold them to the regime, meaning you immediately arrested. You just entered. Normally you enter, you make your first phone call home, you're so excited. That daddy, mommy, how are you? Don't worry, I'm okay. I have come to fight for Allah. You may allow one phone call, and then they never made that phone call. They found themselves arrested, taken all the way to Damascus. He explains, we were put in that prison which was under the road. People would drive above it. No one knew of that prison. So no sunlight. He says, because their parents found out that they had gone into, they became on the UN list of people missing. So the UN sent someone to find out, have you all got them? He says, he remembers the Mufti of Bashar al-Assad said to the family, that you relax, within 1 week, 2 weeks, they'll come home. 1 week, 2 weeks. They stayed in prison for about 11 years. 11 years. Three of them, three Tunisians. As they're explaining to us, they were only released recently. He says, when I was released, I started, like the man said, go out, you're free, you're free. Which means the man of the jail was also a man who was soft. But you have to show hard, otherwise you'll get tortured. So he says, the man of the jail, whenever he could, he would give us things. So I remember the day when he said, you're free, go out, go out. He said, we were so excited. He said, when we came out, we never saw sunlight for so long. Our bodies had never taken in sunlight, so because of that day, you have weakness inside. He said, we had forgotten how to walk. So as we're going, we're telling someone, hold me, hold me. Because we sat in that one place for so many years. Years. So the only thing is they never killed us because our name was on them. They would let you just live to rot. Get weaker, weaker, weaker and die. Says when we entered, three of us, a Syrian brother wrote a letter and he sent it. It was said, Is'al Allah. Ask Allah for such an opening. Farajan. Ask Allah for such an opening. Ta'jabu minhu. That you one day will be shocked about your release. He says, we would make this dua. Oh Allah, we ask you for such an opening that I'll be shocked. He says, when we ran into the masjid of Damascus, the Umayyad masjid, we were shocked to see everyone. Everyone was shocked to see us in this clothes. He says, today I think of the dua. He says, Allah accepted. He said, my Syrian friend, he passed away. But what an opening Allah gave us. He said, we never thought we will ever come out. So then we asked him, 11 years in prison. 11 years. How did you manage? And that answer, you have to hear that answer yourself, like from a man laughing. From a man laughing. He says, the days, the months, the years just went like that. It's so calm. I've got finished. I say, what would you do in prison for 11 years? He says, you know, when I entered, I knew Quran. I was a Hafiz, but my door was very weak in our country. So I had a Mushaf in the initial stages. So I started making my door strong. What a thing. If you ever want to make your door strong, go jail. Best place to make your door strong. He said, then they took out the Mushaf, took it away. He says, by that time already it was not bad. I used to meet a person, ask him, how much of Quran you know? Let's make door. Wherever I was weak, he said, in 11 years my Quran became solid. He says, Quran. He says, at night in Salah in front of Allah. He said, in dua, there's so much things to do. He said, the days, the months, the years just went like that. A man in a prison. Three people who just came out recently, where you would think that that torture will make them like start shivering and say, don't ask me about that. I say, you saw people die in front of you. I say, Lord, Lord. It is something to meet, and you'll meet these people, the people of Iman. No depression, no sadness, only hope. It makes you understand the power of Quran and what power it gives to the people of Quran. They used to read Quran, they understood Quran, and they live in Quran. So the first day after hearing a unique khutbah, the khutbahs that we have always heard in Arab lands is always prepared khutbahs. Our own, the Jummah bayan will be like a bayan which the Mawlana will say whatever he wants to say. But the khutbah is a prepared khutbah. And if you go to the Saudi lands, there the khutbah is prepared. They'll tell you akhlaq. They tell you be good. They'll say Allah's Nabi said this, Rawahul Bukhari, Rawahul Bukhari. It sounds nice, but it's a prepared khutbah. That even if you're not very tired, normally in that khutbah you will start going, and then end of the khutbah you wake up. When we reached there, we were tired because the journey was very long. At that time I'm thinking, I'm musafir also, it's Jummah also, and we're alone, the guy left us. Now you want to walk and say, where's the masjid? And you don't even know anyone, so we asked the person, like, where's the masjid? He said, which masjid? You want that one, that one, that one? And then we just go out and we realize, hey, what a beautiful masjid, yeah. So I went inside, I said, you know, I'm so tired, but the best time to get that small nap is when the khutbah starts. Like, I could already see it's coming. And I knew it's like a prepared khutbah, the same style. And today I'm hearing a different khutbah. I remember a few years ago when we went to Syria, one very old sheikh that was in the safe zone, Turkey had made a safe zone so you could meet the Syrians. So that man had run away from what is known as the Imam Nawawi Jamia, like a big university that had been bombed by the regime, and he and all his students and his teachers ran. Whoever died, died. So at that time there was a distribution, and we said we want to distribute to the ulama of Syria and the Ahl Bayt. So two buses were brought, and all that buses were, it was called Imam Nawawi, Jamia Imam Nawawi, the scholars of, they gathered them from the different areas, so he was there. So when we asked them to speak, the younger one said that that's our elder, he must speak. So the elder said no, that for him to even walk, he said let him speak. So this person came, and then before he came I spoke a little, so I mentioned about Imam Nawawi. Mawlana Abul Hassan Ali Nadwi rahimullah. I mentioned Mawlana Abul Hassan Ali Nadwi. He's an alim from Hindustan. He was very good in Arabic. So when he came, he says that name, Mawlana Ash-Sheikh Abul Hassan Ali Nadwi, he says that man was iman for our hearts. He says we would read the books of Sheikh Abul Hassan Ali Nadwi and the smell of jihad would come out. He said that. He says, our teacher at the Jamia would tell us, this is a book to read. He says, our teacher would then tell us, see, we're teaching in this Jamia, but we're under a regime. So I remembered all of this during this khutbah. He says, the teacher would tell us, as long as we have to write a khutbah, and then have it passed by the government, we will never be free. And we will never have the chance to say the word jihad to our children. Whereas we know the first markaz of the Mahdi is going to be this land. But if our children cannot hear jihad, he says then the war started. He said then we ran. He said then we had to settle in tents. Then Allah made it, whoever survived, he opened up a madrasa wherever he was. Says one jamia of Imam Nawawi became many jamias. He says, but what my teacher said, the freedom of the tongue, of the hands, to be able to say the word jihad, he said, we got it after the war started. He said, what we regarded as a misfortune, calamity, niqmah, we now find it to be a ni'mah, Allah's gift. When I saw this man giving the khutbah in Damascus, understand, Damascus is so modern, so modern. We had a meal at a certain restaurant with some of those people who took part in taking over the country. They came from Idlib. Now they were told, move into Damascus. The one person said to the government, my daughter just met a girl who goes to the school. My daughter came home and she said, Daddy, they wear tight trousers. Why can't I wear a trouser like that? He said, I told the government, there's no way I'm bringing my children to Damascus. Damascus, when we came out of that restaurant, in front of us was a disco. Dancing was taking place. Those people never even knew a war took place. For them, music is halal, totally halal. That mujahid looked at it and he said to me, we have to make a lot of sabr. He said, it's going to take these people very long. He said, with so much of wisdom, we will have to win them over. Imagine you see a nation, you can take the gun and go there. You are the army now. He said, stop it. He looked at it, he said, a lot of sabr. That was Damascus. So modern, Damascus. But in Damascus, I'm hearing a khutbah. On the verge of falling asleep, I hear this khutbah. The khutbah will tell you the future of the land of Sham. Because this is the khutbah of a man who's free now. A khutbah where he says the train of Islam is going to reach its destination. He says, but me and you, whether we'll be in the train or looking at the train, that's our question. As he started, I said, this looks like a tablighi bayan. A imaniyat this was, but in Arabic as a khutbah. At that day, it was when all the Arab countries had got together in Qatar to say that Israel bombed Qatar, what are we going to do about it? And it was the same day that they all came out and said that, you know, apologize. So he said, that if the Arab leaders cannot make one saf against the forces of Batil, he says, are me and you going to sit here and cry about it? He says, I have to ask you, if all those Arab leaders and all their jamiat and all their students cannot create one saf, then instead of worrying of the saf coming from the top, let's start worrying of the saf coming from the bottom. He said, can I stand in that saf? Me and my children. He said, you and your children. Are we ready? He said, you'll have to make an effort on yourself and the people around you. And then they'll join with the next, and one saf will one day be established. And then he spoke about starting with ourselves. Then he started mentioning the ahadith of jihad. As I'm listening to that, like my sleep went away. I took out a pen, I said, I have to write this khutbah. But for me, if the khutbah is this, in a land which from the time the Khilafat fell, had never heard about jihad fi sabilillah Damascus. And now they're hearing a man talking like this. Then I said, there's hope for this land. The next day, now we go out of Damascus, now the journey starts. We enter very close to Damascus, there's a place called Jobar. Jobar is part of the land called Ghouta. Ghouta is mentioned in the Ahadith, the tent of the believers at the time of Fitan. Meaning at the time when the great wars will break out, Ghouta will be the tent. There by the masjid, they have blown up masjid. It was our first understanding of the person taking us, said, you want to see Gaza? He said, you want to see Gaza? The journey has started. He said, this is Gaza. And he was not exaggerating. I want you to think of example Durban. And every single building in Durban is bombed. Think of that. Not finding one not bombed. I thought it was like a jet would come and drop a bomb. It was a drone would come to see which place is still not bombed. And that drone would be followed by another drone targeted for that one place and bombed. So there could not be one building unbombed, untouched. So you just enter and you just see rubble, only rubble. Asked, where's Ghouta? He said, this is Ghouta. Immediately my friend said, I don't think anyone will ever come to live here. Just to remove the rubble will cost billions. Somebody else said, it's rather that we start putting up houses for them somewhere else. Said, if there is somewhere, the man said, there is, like open land. We're walking in rubble. Someone says, that is the masjid. You look at the masjid, bombed. Everything bombed. As I'm walking, I'm reading one verse of Quran, where a Nabi of Allah said, when he saw Masjid al-Aqsa was destroyed by Bukht al-Nasr, he said, where will Allah ever give life to this place again? Then I said to my friend, like in 100 years, his eyes opened again and the whole thing had life. But now where we got 100 years to have Pasham? Bombed out, bombed out. Then we are on scooter bike behind us. Can you move the car? The janazah is coming. Whose janazah? Says one friend on a bike passed away. And we understood that day why they passed away with the bikes. Because if we had to see after that how they ride those bikes, then you understand lots supposed to pass away. So one passed away. A janazah. So I said, hey, if a janazah is taking place, this is a ghost town. In a ghost town, who's going to be there? So I said, since we rather take part in the janazah. So somebody immediately said, I got no wuzu. Where are you going to get water in a bombed out area? I said, I got wuzu, mate. Quickly, we got wuzu, mate. Now people are making wuzu. These people are looking at us like funny. They say, why don't you go to the wuzu khana? So we asked, like, wuzu, like, in a bombed out place. Say, yeah, there's it. Now everyone say, hey, top water this is. So wuzu khana. One say, what a wuzu khana is doing in the middle of a ghost city? Say, for the masjid. I say, where's the masjid? He said, there's the masjid. The entrance is from the back. I'm looking at that masjid. I say, no way. This thing is bombed. You go from the entrance, from the back, the carpets are laid down. Right in the front is the imam's chair and his desk also, Quran there. They already got an appointed imam. As we enter, you see those rocks also hanging like. Any moment they can also go like. And then the whole masjid falls up for the janazah. From way cars and I don't know, the vans come and the scooters come. And the janazah after Zohar Salah takes place and I'm saying, like, one person said, this is our village. This is our village. We coming back to our village. There's the imam there. We already got an appointed imam. I live there. I live there. That's where you live. They have already settled in a bombed out house. And slowly, like how we go out to our gardens and we take out the weeds, every day they go out and they pick up some rocks and they move it. And they're making their own house again. Walls are there, meaning stone walls which the bombs could not bring down. And connecting the joints, like every day they're doing something. Not waiting for no one. Suddenly you realize in a bombed out Jobar, there's life. Then we went to the next town. They said once upon a time, this place had a siege of 5 years. During that siege, from all sides, they ensured that no help could come in. Said during that time, a person was ready, and it happened, to sell their car for 50 k's of rice. You give me 50 k's of rice, take my car. He told us that because we saw cars slide out. 50 k's. They said animals died because of the siege. And then people had to eat those animals. Said this land saw it. You normally will enter and you'll think like trauma, trauma. You see, life started again. Life started again. It's very hard to meet a person who cries and tells you, you know what we went through. Our first person we meet now, we stop at one house. Speaking to him, he explains. First person we're meeting now. He says, you know, when the bomb fell here, I also went under the rubble. And my 5 children all passed away. So when he just says that, you like want to cry. Say, Inna lillah. And he says, Walhamdulillah. You love always to see a man. I mean, ask any Maulana who deals with problems of people. I don't deal. I'm telling you straight, I don't deal. And no matter how many times I say that, I always get a phone call that, do you deal? We don't deal. But I feel sorry for the Morana who deals. The uncle don't leave him, and the auntie, she don't leave him at all. She'll phone late at night also, and Morana, one more point. Tell my husband, one more point. Sometimes I think the Morana wants to tell that, Appa, you know what? If you are my wife, I'll divorce you also. Carrying on, just. So I don't ever like to see a sad face. If someone comes and says, I want to discuss, I say, send an email. Sometimes I look at some emails of mine, it's called urgent, but it was 1 year ago. I say, I've answered that day now, that girl could be divorced maybe, or sometimes it's an istikhara, I say, marry this boy. Now if the thing's not looking good, imagine now I say, and they already got children. So you just don't answer. 2 years, people's stories. So it hurts us when we go to a land which had bombs. But we have to offer help. But imagine when you hear a man saying, Alhamdulillah. Then the one sentence in the land of Sham is, others were tested more than me. 5 children. He said, in this area we all love. So 16 that day passed away when the bombing started. He said, then the regime came, then they sent us. We went, now we came back. I said, where you stay? He said, there. Say there. So calm, there's my house. Say, where? Say, all of us who came back, we found the best place from all the places bombed, the best of the bomb places. And we all moved in there. No roof. So you find one flag, you put up the flag, that's your roof. He says, now I'll be there every day, now we work on one man's house. When that one will get ready, some family will go there. Some family will go, some family. No stress. No, I came here, it bombed out. You never even say, help me, please help me, please help me. And you go away, like you say, like what Allah gave us. And you still see us stressing. And Allah gave them nothing. As I'm walking away, I saw in the distance, there were 2 old aunties. They were sitting outside their bombed out house. Someone had given them chairs. So think of a Sunday afternoon in your garden, and you got your 2 old aunties sitting and having a conversation. Here in a bombed out house, you got 2 aunties sitting, and they're talking like nothing happened in the world. Relaxed. Then we carried on. So that point now, the man tells us, from here to where we have to reach, just on this, we might pass about 1,000 villages. And every village is bombed like the first one. 1,000. So what will happen? You will enter one village. You can't go all the villages. You say, let's enter one village and work in one village. And another village, somebody else will come. Let's go to one village. When you enter the village, you'll see houses and you'll see a masjid. You will understand the regime when they started the attacks. First they would look for the masjid. One masjid we saw, the base of the regime was nearby. I think it was the Iranian base. He says whenever they had nothing to do, they would bomb the masjid again. Just. So even if you put up a little bit, again they decide to do, just bomb it. Someone's reading Salah, he says, but during that time, as long as the regime never kicked us out of here, Salah would carry on in that bombed out masjid always. They would bomb it and people would pass away. And the next Salah people would be in it again. When you hear Gaza, you see Syria. Gaza is the same. They would come like nothing happened. Then the regime now would move in. What was making them do this? Perhaps they also saw the narrations that Syria is the markaz of the Mahdi. So how do you make sure Syria can never accommodate, Damascus can never accommodate the armies of Islam? You create a line of Shia rule. Damascus, Syria in the middle. So it starts with Iran. You got Iran, next to it is Iraq. Iraq for a couple of years ago was ruled by the Sunnah, Ahle Sunnah. Saddam Hussein was once upon a time not good, then he became good, but the military was not Shia. Then that lie came about weapons of mass destruction. It was only to take the Ahle Sunnah out and to create a Shia rule. So you have Iran, you got Iraq. After that day you have Syria. Iran, Iraq, Syria. Syria was under Hafiz al-Assad, Shia rule. Then you have Lebanon, Shia rule. So it's one line of Shia rule. There's no chance of the Mahdi ever getting any attention in this land. But as the hadith mentions, towards the end of time, Sham will be returned to the people of goodness. That's what we saw now. How they came from nowhere. From nowhere. They kicked out everyone after bombing. People would go underground in tunnels and stay there for days. Then the armies would come. One street we reached. They said, we only stopped on the street to tell you that there was one day where the soldiers entered and they just said a game, enter every house and kill. He said, in that day, from the beginning of the street till the end of the street, they just entered, shot, 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 next house, shot, 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 next house. He said, they kill everyone on the street. They gave us a number also, the street became famous. So what they got out of it, as we said, it was for them an ibadah. For them it was an ibadah. The man tells me, I remember we were going, we had our clothes with us, and we crossing a border, they kicking us out. At the border, this Alawi, meaning Bashar al-Assad's soldiers, Alawi says to this person's sister-in-law, that swear, most likely swear Aisha radiallahu anha, swear. So she just looked at that man. In front of everyone, he just took a knife and he just slit the stomach. So she was pregnant. They used to see anyone pregnant, just slit. And then she just falls and you're just quiet. You can't say nothing. And for them, not one soldier would look, what did you do? Like everyone say, let's push away. He said, we saw that. Normally you think such trauma, you're not seeing any trauma in this people. What strength. So now when the soldiers would move in, the government had no money for them. So they were told, whatever you can steal, now steal. So some would stand with their guns on guard. And the others would enter a house. First the people were all told, leave, otherwise we'll shoot. Leave. And now you start walking to where? All the way to Turkey. Go somewhere. Just go. And then soldiers enter. You'll have to only see this to understand. See this masjid here. There's a lot of things you can steal from this masjid. But even a thief in the ending will get tired of stealing. These soldiers stole every single thing that could be ripped out. Even tiles that were stuck to the wall, that tile was ripped out. What money you'll get for a used tile? They stole the tiles. They stole wires. The only thing that was left was that which the bomb could not bring down. That stands. They emptied out everything. And they sold it for like practically nothing. And then they would go next town, next town, next town. So he says 1,000 villages just on this journey we will make. Besides the rest of the country. The people were just pushed out. The regime went in. Ask who did this to them? So the driver says that, you know, we had many enemies. The regime was our enemy. Iran was our enemy. Lebanon was our enemy. Iraq was our enemy. Israel was our enemy. ISIS was the enemy. He said from on top, from inside, from everywhere, we were just being bombed. Everywhere. He says, me, when I was young, I lifted up the flag of Hezbollah, Lebanon. Because Hezbollah, Muslim state, Lebanon, fighting against Israel. He said, I carried the flag and I said, he said, then the day came where Hezbollah bombed us. He said, they bombed us. He says, the regime would call us when we stood up, the rebellion, the Syrian rebellion. He said, we called it the Syrian uprising that exposed our enemies. He says, we thought Lebanon, Iran was our friends. We really thought they'll help us. He said, their soldiers killed more of us than even the regime. He says, it opened up, it exposed, we call it Athawratul Kashifi. The rebellion that exposed the truth. He said, who we trusted. We thought this Muslim state, that Muslim, he even pointed, he says, there's the Iranian base. How they would bomb us from there. How they would bomb us. And we carried on. So we reach this place now where they're showing us now what work you want to do. How do you build a whole country? So the one man says, you must never worry about building the country. Because these people will build their own country. Whatever you want to do, help. But don't ever think it's going to come up with your help. It will come up with the decision of Allah and the courage of these people. They're not bothered whether you're helping or not. You see this man, he's in charge of the masjid. He said, I'll put up the masjid, the people will move in into immediately. We used to live here, it's our village. I said, how are you putting up the masjid? He said, I created a WhatsApp group with my friends who already ran over. One is in Germany, one is in here. We got a group. I take a picture of the masjid. I say, right now we need so much money. He says, see, this amount came. See, this amount came. See, this amount. Say, as money comes in, we immediately start ordering this, ordering that. So much of himmat. Not standing there and waiting. Who's going to come and help us? He even said, if we don't do, who's going to do? If we don't do, who's going to do? So I will end this. He says, this masjid was bombed so many times. He says, that time I used to be the muazzin here. They used to bomb it, we used to read namaz next salah. He says, until they came and they sent us. He says, today I come back, I see the masjid was bombed again. He says, this masjid will go up again. And already he started. So we enter, ask the person, how much it costs to fix up one man's house? One man's house. Because he's going to move in now, he's coming back, he got no house. How much it costs one man? He start calculating, calculating, he say 50,000. I say like $50,000. He said, no, 50,000 rands. He said, 50,000 rands? A house? He says, why, is that too much? 50,000. I said, 50,000. He says, yeah, you can see the walls are here already. Now he just put. Some of these people are so unique. When they were sent over to Turkey, and then that safe zone was created, from South Africa, from England, from other countries, people went in the past. And houses were built for them there. In that safe zone, houses. And it was zakat. So zakat in the house was given to a man. And now that man was told, go back to your village. So he came to the village. Now he's seeing, I got building, I got walls, but no house. So what he did, he jumped in a taxi, he went all the way back. There he's checking up that door there, and that window can fit here. So he put it in a taxi and he brings it. You'll see one house where the window is there. Now they just need to close up around it. So it was his house. So much of him, but I came here, there's no house. Yeah, I've got a house there, I'll bring that house here. Okay. So much of him, but so much of courage. When Allah wants a nation to rise to be, the saviors of the Islamic spirit, He gives unique himmat. Unique himmat. 50,000 house. He said, this masjid, how much it will cost to do up the masjid? He said, about 100,000, 200,000. 200,000 will do up the 200,000. One, two masjid, you see, needs like a big, it's a huge masjid that needs a lot of money. The normal masjid, 100, you just need that, you need a little bit that, the masjid is done. Our normal, when we enter, they say, where's the carpets? First thing, I only need another 1 million for the carpets. They won't talk of carpets. They won't talk of carpets. We closed that day, that thing was bombed there, we just do some patching up there. And everyone just comes in the masjid, everyone. Like nothing happened. Nothing happened. Allah Ta'ala gave us a chance to sit with those people who took part in this victory. So now we leave the country itself. May Allah make it. We all go. And you all adopt one house you can put up. Can't put up a whole village. Put up one house. One house. But put it up with ikhlas, obviously. Because when I mentioned to someone, put up one house, he said, what happens if I put up one house and quietly I marry the woman of that house? I said, no ikhlas in our money. Like, everything has to do with a Syrian woman. Like, everything. So go with ikhlas, go with your family and put up one house with ikhlas. Then we had distributions, you'll distribute, you'll see there are women, there are orphans, there are people. I mean, they're coming to nothing. But you don't see no one cry. You don't see no one cry. They are so happy. So happy. Then we had the chance to sit with those people who took part in this. Finally. So Allah Tabarakala made it, we met with some people who are very like senior nature. We had the chance to ask them, can you describe to us what was that victory? How do you take over a country? So he says, you can't describe the last few days, you have to start from 2019. So very fast now, we'll start 2019 and see, like in 15 minutes you can go. From 2019 onwards. He said in 2019, there was many groups. Turkey had made deals with many of them that you all also don't fight and you all won't get bombed. And they were like kept in their safe zones. This group in Idlib never go under this. So they were continuously getting bombed. He said, but in 2019, in one battle, we lost 1,500 soldiers. He says, that for us was a lot. Many people then decided that, you know what, this thing is not going to work. Rather just join and game over. Those people who had made hijrat, they said, we made hijrat for this. We made hijrat, we left our wealth, we left our families, we're not leaving this thing. He said, so our leader said to us, that you know, just fighting is not getting us anywhere. So many years we're fighting. And they created a 5-year plan. And then the leader said, after 5 years we'll start the fight again. Until then, just look after this ribat. And for 5 years we remained in this area to make sure the enemy couldn't go any further. Bombs would carry on. When they would bomb, you go underground in your tunnels. They had unique tunnels running. You go in this tunnel, you come out somewhere else, you shoot from there, you go in this tunnel, you out somewhere else. You're like a small animal, you go inside. That tunnel is made under rock, so even if a bomb falls inside the tunnel, sometimes some stones will fall, otherwise. They lived with those tunnels, shooting, disappearing in the tunnel, bombing again the enemy, then they coming soldiers, you come out again, you shoot. You see your family, friend pass away, you look at him, ask one person, how do you feel when you see someone pass away in front of you? He says, like a doctor. Like a doctor. A doctor sees many people pass away. I made a journey with one friend, a doctor for Umrah. As we just entered the haram, one man fell down in front of us. Just like that. But the night before when we're walking, we're seeing one woman. She's by her husband. And he's down and she's crying. And so I told him, hey, you're a doctor, like. So he went there, he just looked and he walked away. So I told him, like, you're not going to do this, whatever they call it, that CPR or whatever. He says, no, he hit the jackpot, like. Just like, hit the jackpot. I said, huh? He said, yeah, he's gone, like, gone. So I said, like, he was so calm, because he saw so many people pass away. I'm like, just shocked. That woman is crying, another woman is coming and trying CPR, but he told me, no, you can see in the eyes, guy, hit the jackpot. Let's carry on. Next morning, Fajr, we're walking in front of us, another one fall. I said, can't again happen. So he goes in front of the person. Now that police guard is standing there, they don't do nothing, they like phoning. So he just came and told the police guard, I told him, doctor, real doctor. I said, yeah. So he just pressed the stomach, like, I don't know where you press, you press one hard thing, yeah. He just pressed and the guy woke up. So he said, that's that one place where nothing is happening in the hospital, you press there. If it comes, it's like, you know, you just plugged again. It doesn't come, gone. He just pressed. And then he just walked with me like, can I tell him, you're so calm. So he said, you know, in a hospital, every day you see someone going. After a while, it becomes normal. So when I asked this person, like, how many people passed away in front of you? How you feel? He said, you only feel it when maybe your brother passes away. So I asked him, okay, when your brother passed away, how did you feel it? He says, I wasn't there. He was in another place. But when the news reached us of his death, it also reached us with the dream the man saw that night. He was with the brother, that man. So he could send the dream. He said, I saw your brother in my dream. Asked him, what happened? He said, I heard a bang. That was the bomb that fell. And I found myself in the clouds. He said, I opened my eyes, I was in the clouds already. I said, such a dream. Like. And then he said, in the dream I can hear someone reading Quranic ayat. فَرِحِينَ بِمَا آتَاهُمُ اللَّهِ So happy with what Allah has given. That's how the pain went away. So otherwise another person falls dead in front of you, you just move. A lot of times you don't even have chance to bury him. You just carry on. So we ask the person, explain to us like how you all won this. Crux of it is from 2019, their leaders said it's not a thing of war. It's a thing of tarbiyat. So a 5-year plan was established. In that 5-year plan, one was, what happens if we one day take over the country? And that is why they're saying that now we understood. In 2014, they say we came so close to taking over. 2014. And then they were pushed all the way back again. 2019, they lost 1,500. He says, in 2014, if Allah let us take over Syria, we would not have been ready for it. He says, it's not just taking a country. He said, victory is like an apple. When you get victory, you pluck the apple. You're so happy. But then you realize that you have to now make sure you can keep the apple fresh. He says, before that it was just shooting a gun. Now you have to worry of an entire country. Each person is your child now. You have to explain to him the value of deen. He mustn't hate Islam. He says, now we understood what that preparation was. In that preparation it was, there would be one day in the week where one group comes to 4 mashayikh. Each one gets 1 hour, so 4 hours durus. A dars of sirat, a dars of history, a dars of Quran, and a dars of fiqh. Then there is one day where you have 2 hours which is called halqa of Quran. So 10 people, you have one person. The most of Quran who knows, he is the Amir. And he must make sure the other 9 reach his level of Quran. He says, this was for every group. Then the group needed, I think it was a 2-week intense course, where you pulled away from fighting. Morning to eve, night, morning to night, 2 weeks, you only stay with the elders, with the mashayikh. He says, we needed the short intense course. You needed the frequent normal courses. Example, in tabligh you'll say, you have to go stay with the elders, give your time. And then you say, make sure once a week you do your gush, twice a week. He said, same thing. After a time I sat with him on the dastarkhan, I said, what do you think tabligh will work in Syria? Like, he said, what tabligh? Like, I'm thinking, because many of them are Salafi, so you don't know, you even say like the tabligh of India, the tabligh of Murana Muhammad Ilyas. I said, you think tabligh will work here, like da'wah, da'wah ilallah? He said, me, I went 1 year in the path of Allah. Jordan, he said, it was tabligh that taught us many of the principles with which we created the jihad. He said, ita'ati amir, we learnt it fil khuruj. He said, one of the most important parts of the war was, you have to learn to be obedient to the amir. Even if he says something that you're not too happy with, he said, tabligh taught us ita'ati amir and khidmati khalq. He said, I learnt it in khuruj. So he says, a 5-year plan, where every person who comes out after that is not only a fighter. This you will see when you go. The man driving you, he will speak so much of Quran and Sunnah that you will think him fit to be the Shaykhul Hadith of the madrasa. But he is the taxi driver. Our driver, because I could speak Arabic a little bit, not a lot, but when you're in the land where you have to speak, you speak it. He'll come out, even the non-people who never knew Arabic were speaking Arabic. You learn it, because he can't speak English, I want to say something. But because we know a little bit more because of the madrasa, so I started speaking with him more. So I found him amazed that in an amazing manner he would read an ayat of Quran. He would say, Allah says this in Quran. And then he would explain like what's the lesson behind it. So because I also got an inclination towards this, I would sometimes tell him, and in this verse, this Allah says it like this. Then he would say, in the seerah, and he would narrate a hadith, then I would narrate a hadith, now it was going on. Then he started the poetry of Imam Shafi'i, rahimullah. And he starts quoting the poetry, then I got stuck. Then I told him, you rather sit here and let me drive now. Like, you are like my sheikh. I said, where you will learn such high poetry? You know, I'm a poet actually. And then he started telling me about all the poetry laws, and I'm just thinking, I don't know what he's saying. The high stuff, like, he's the driver. Quran and Sunnah is in his life. In the other taxi, other van behind us, they couldn't converse so much with their driver. So not that he's getting bored. The whole journey, for hours, while driving, he was only reading Quran. Only reading Quran. You say, you are like the sheikh, he's a driver. Only Quran. This one, only Quran, hadith, ta's. He says, Imam Shafi is ash'ar head. Imaniyat in it, and he gives one share, and oh, whole long share, another share. Then I told him, like, I'm just looking, like. He says, you know, Imam Shafi is ash'ar, he says, gee, I read nothing. Hey, heard of it, like, memorized it, one after the other. He said, my father was a poet, I'm a poet. Taxi driver. But the amazing thing is, he wasn't narrating a hadith to me. He was explaining to me the lessons that came out from that narration. As though I was sitting in a Darul Uloom in the final year, and the Shaykhul Hadith is giving the dars. That's the driver is giving the dars. He says, the war, this we did in the war because this narration, everything has to do with the seerah. Everything. The seerah. To such an extent, we met one man. Very few got a lot more than one wife. Very few. But one got four wives. So everybody immediately looked at him like, how you manage? So his answer was, if you want to manage with four wives, you have to study the seerah of Rasulullah. Everything is seerah. And then he starts, in the seerah it was like this, and Allah's Nabi did this, Allah's Nabi, Allah's Nabi. You understand, in that 5 years, from their mashayikh, they learned so much of the seerah. That now when they took over the country, their entire mind works like how Rasulullah s.a.w. planned it. Everything of theirs is Quran and the seerah. Quran and the seerah. The normal people. Forget the mashayikh. We were speaking with normal people. I told a person, if you come to our country, they'll make you like Shaykhul Hadith. How is quoting Quran, Sunnah, quoting Quran, Sunnah? Normal man. So he said, 5 years. That was what was called the ta'lim part. Then the leader said, now comes the fighting part. He said, everyone knows how to shoot. But you don't just fight. We had to give training now to see what's your level. Are you really meant as a fighter or are you not a fighter, a supporter? He said, so they created tests for the fighters. You have to go through the tests. He said, the test made the fighter and us realize who's who. Where you are. Maybe you are a top doctor, but you're not a fighter. He says, so you will stay at the back. We cannot risk other people's lives with you. You can't do these things which others are doing. He said, when the training started like this, he said, about 4,000 soldiers we returned. We told them, you rather stay as supporters. You are not going to fight this thing. Because you will be a burden to the fighters as they go in. Then he said, the best of this group who managed the test, the best of them were taken through a third training. They were now sent out while everybody else's, they were gone now to a high level. One group became known as the Red Bandits. Because Abu Dujana was a Sahabi radiallahu anhu, known, very brave. So he put on a red, like a, whatever you call it, like a red band. So they were called Al-Asa'ibul Hamra. The ones who tied the red band. They were the bravest of this military. I asked him, how many people were you when you took over this? He said, all together we were 14 to 16,000. But in that day, it was only 24,000 there. 8,000 were fighters. And the rest were just to move with the army. And to give logistic support and other support. 8,000. So in the 8,000, you had two groups. One is Asa'ib-e-Hamra. And you had a group of 500 called Kata'ib-e-Khalid. The group of Khalid bin Walid radiallahu anhu. So he explains about this group. That this group had to make the first walk. So the enemy have an area where you will shoot, and there's only one place for people to pass, whether it's with cars, and you just bomb there, and there's no way they can get through, bomb, bomb, bomb. So there's no way this group can ever go that side. Now an entire plan is put into place. But if that plan doesn't work, you're going to get bombed. All must be ready to die. So the leader meets them the night before. He says, what do you expect tomorrow? He says, the answer they all give is, tomorrow we are meeting our Allah. That was the answer. Meeting our Allah. They had already sent long before that weapons and tanks, and it was buried under the sands. So now when this group went, they must just take it out from the sand, and that day there will be, I think, 4 or 6 vehicles which will transport this group. And the others will be on foot, but at least you have that few vehicles going. Now they're trying to start the vehicles. The vehicles are not starting. It was under the sand. They send a message back. The leader says, call off the operation. After so long, this operation has started. He says, they send the message back. We already promised Allah we are going to meet Him tomorrow. We will walk. And they went walking. It's easy to say it. When you see a man who says, I went looking for death so many times. After that, a few days later, we were in front of the grave of Khalid bin Walid radiallahu anhu. And by his grave, they have that written there. So many wounds on the man's body. He went looking for death in every battle. We saw a group of people who went looking for death. Went looking for death. I met a person, he's telling me, when the news came that our armies are already going to Damascus, and he was a head. Head means, not you sit back and you relax and say, do this. Head means that you must be in the front. You must take the first shot. The command comes, go to Damascus. The shortest route is through the desert. He says, there's bombs. The car in front of us immediately goes, it's bombed. 5 people pass away. So we pull them out. Then we jump in the car. I said, you are going to go on the same road. He says, to be a mujahid, you must be ready to take the bullet or the bomb to make it easy for the next person to go past. He says, you just jump in the car and you go looking for the next one. When you meet people like that, you meet people, I say, what happened? And he said, I heard someone hooting from behind. That one car behind had this, what you call this, Starlink. Starlink, so it was the only connection to the internet. That man hoots, they all go there quickly with their phones, they're linking to Starlink, they're seeing on their phones that people are already making sajda in Damascus. He says, we got so happy for 2 reasons. One is with victory. Second, I don't have to drive on the roads. He said, he jumped back to go the other way again. I said, you were just going to drive on the road. He said, you know me, I went looking for death so many times. I would be the one who kicks the door open and walk inside waiting for the bullet never comes. When you meet a person like that there, you understand. When we met the Kataib Khalid, I said to them, that Allah has written the victory of Islam on the hands of people who love death like how we love life. Khalid bin Walid radiallahu anhu said that to the enemy. I got a group that loves death like how we love life. So I said to them, I used to always wonder, where will this Jamaat ever be created? He says, today I found the Jamaat. When they said to the leader, we promised Allah we're going to meet Him tomorrow, we'll walk. They walked knowing the enemy just has to see them and they're all gone. Allah tabarak wa ta'ala made it. The enemy were gone before that. Things just fell in place, amazing things. It's called fear. They had a man who dressed up with the press written here, the press. But he wasn't the press, he was a fighter. But he's called the press. He went underground. They go through sewages, they go underground. They go through places where there's no oxygen. They had oxygen tanks, they had an electric cart, you're going through, you come out somewhere else, they came out somewhere else. Few of them, he stands there in front. He got a few people with cameras focusing on him. And in a calm manner, he says, we have reached on the outskirts of the city. The mujahids are already inside. Heavy fighting taking place in the city. And then you can hear, boo! And then quickly went back in the tunnel and gone. There was no one on that side. No one. But those soldiers now sitting on top, They suddenly know that where they were tracking, they knew that the Muslims, the Sunnah, people of the Sunnah had telegram. Until that day they were using telegram. When the command came to go, they all cut. And they were given a new application to put on for that short while. So the enemy now is losing. They don't know where they are. So you go to the internet. On the internet you're seeing the news. You're seeing a news reporter saying, we are in the city. Heavy fighting taking place in the city. This man is wondering, if they in the city, how they got to the city? Without even thinking, if they in the city, I must go and attack them. He said, that's the difference between a mujahid and a coward. He heard we were in the city, but no one was in the city. They just stood there by one place, because they went under, stood there and gone. Those fighters saw they in the city. If they in the city, then it means from inside they're going to come. Those fighters took out their uniforms. They left their weapons and they disappeared. They joined the normal people. Those few people in the city now, they made an announcement, come out people, come out, we have taken over the city. No one's in the city, sir. Now everyone starts coming out from their houses. Three people got guns, they lift up their guns. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Like everybody is here, there's no one here. Enemy is just taking out their uniforms, leaving as the mujahideen are coming in. They just see lines of weapons and uniforms. Lines. No fighting was taking place because the enemy were just leaving their posts on the basis of what they were seeing. See, that's the difference between a coward and a mujahid. He says, we never dreamt in such a short while we were going to reach where we had to reach. He said, someone made a phone call to ask one of the people that when do you think you'll get to Damascus? He says, that phone call was actually like a made phone call. Because Russia wanted to know how many days they got before they will come. He says, in our talks, Damascus wasn't even there. We had said it will take us 1 month to get this first city. He says, that man who's speaking was so excited, he said, in 24 hours we'll be there. He said, later on they're telling him, like, are you mad 24 hours? He said, Allah will make it happen. But then they heard later on that people were listening to that call. When they heard in 24 hours we're going to be there, they gave the command. Immediately Bashar al-Assad was told, right now board a plane and get out. So he boarded. While food was still being made, that food was laid out in his room. That food was there and the man is waiting for him. And no one in the palace knew. From behind he went out. 4 o'clock in the morning the news spread. Bashar al-Assad is gone. He fled before anyone reached. Before anyone reached. When the news went, he fled. All the soldiers started deserting again. Even Damascus. Allah Ta'ala says, that day we saw so much of barakah, which we had never seen in our wars from the past. Now he gave us these few lessons. That was like the crux. In detail he went through it, but that was the crux. He says, we never thought we will take over so fast. When we reached there, he says, like we were shocked. It fell so fast. He says, Allah Ta'ala has told us in Quran, فَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ مَا اسْتَطَعْتُمْ وَأَعِدُّوا لَهُمْ مَا اسْتَطَعْتُمْ مِنْ قُوَّةٍ. That you will have to prepare for the enemy what you can manage. He says, we did that. He said, if someone had to tell us we must defeat the enemy. He said, the enemy are 7 countries and we are a small group. But we did what Allah told us. He says, but we were told by our scholars, the purpose of our training is تُرْهِبُونَ بِهِ عَدُوَ اللَّهِ. That I only want you to prepare so you can make the enemy scared. He said, that's very easy. Anyone can make the enemy scared. He said, when the level was kept low, it was easy. As for victory, وَمَن نَصْرُ إِلَّا مِنْ عِنْدِ اللَّهِ. Our leaders told us, victory comes when Allah wants it to come. He said, we learned many lessons in this war. One, never ever fight when the enemy wants you to fight. You will only fight when you are ready to fight. He says, the day we know we're ready for a fight, we'll fight. Until that time, the enemy at the moment wants us to fight. He says, never fight when they want you to fight. Fight when you're ready to fight. He says, don't ever make a punch or a shot until you know you are ready to face the repercussions of that shot. He says, when we know we're ready to face repercussions, us and our people will make the first shot. Until then, give us time to prepare. From the child to the highest leader, we ask them, what's the dream? The answer will be Al-Aqsa. Says the dream is Al-Aqsa. Normally after a war, you ask, what's the dream? You say, our children never had an education. They never saw a school. They never had time to play with their friends. Now at least let me give it to my child what I couldn't get. When you ask them, what's the dream? You say, the dream is Al-Aqsa. When you see those fighters, when they read their nazm is on Al-Aqsa. We went to one school. Two paintings were made. One painting of the Masjid of Damascus, the Umayyad Masjid. One painting of Al-Aqsa. By Al-Aqsa painting, they got there one man coming on parachute, landing on Al-Aqsa. And on the Umayyad Masjid, he says, our children, when it used to rain, they used to play here. When they would play, when game was finished, break is finished. Imagine our school breaks. Our school break ends with what? The bell rings and you run to class. Their break would end with this. That on one picture we would say, that's our one dream. One day we will get Damascus. He says, that's our second dream. One day we will get Aqsa. The man is saying, now the holidays, because they closed after that. So many things happened after the victory. He says, now when our children will come back, now we tell them the one dream has been fulfilled. There's one dream remaining. He says, we never knew we will enter Damascus so fast. He said, the goal is Al-Aqsa. We ask them, what can the people of South Africa do? The person says, remember the meaning of jihad is not a small word. It is the peak of Islam. But jihad doesn't mean lifting a weapon. Jihad means being ready to exert your efforts. His words were majority of places in Quran where Allah used the word jihad. He first said, jahidu bi amwalikum. Make jihad with your wealth and with your life. He says, everyone's jihad in every country is different. He says, but we are united force. He says, as long as you can give dawah in your country, give dawah, that's your jihad. He says, and the wealth that you people have sent in the past and now, he says, it has not gone unnoticed. It has not gone unnoticed. He says, that is part of it. Says, we want investments in this land, and we get so happy if a Muslim has to invest. Said, we would love people to come and help to build up this land because we don't have that wealth. And we have already put our wealth somewhere else. So with your wealth, with your investments, with your du'as, he says, and in your own country to make an effort. Said, we all linked in this. It's a country to visit, to see how much we can do, how much already South Africans have done. When I saw it, I was shocked that from a small country where the currency is so weak, so much was done. Everyone's little becomes lot. Everyone's little. One holiday, I'm not saying don't go on holiday and send your zakat to them. I'm saying take a holiday and go to them. One holiday. Instead of going to Dubai, one holiday, go to Sharm. One holiday. Obviously when you're going, if you're taking your wife now, make sure you do your proper booking arrangements. Don't take her to that place which got that toilet. They have now, you must remember, the hotels are still our type. And the other houses, even if they tell you, you South African, I know you like 5-star. Come here in this bathroom. But that bathroom is not 5-star. But remember that. They have that system when you enter a toilet, that there's no chain. So it's a closed pan. So the dirt falls on top. But if so much dirt falls, it will open up finally. So if you don't know that there now, if you know it, all you have to do is just take water and shoot until it opens up and you got a clean toilet. But if you don't know, when my friend entered the toilet, he needs to go urgently. There's a toilet there. Come out. Say, what happens? He said, that last guy ate fish. I know he ate fish. So now you must know that that's going to be, now you don't take your wife there now. You take a proper hotel and then you go see, then you come back. So you have to make your proper research where to go. You don't go to someone's house and you go in there. I need to use the bathroom. That you don't do because this place was bombed. Even the water, I was scared to drink it. Because they will drink their water. But so much of bombs fell in that land that even that pure water that comes from the borehole will have that. So you just use bottled water even to gargle the mouth. Because you're so scared. But they, one person said, I'll not eat the salad in this country. Normally salad, you say, is the most healthy. He says, because the salad is washed with the water. And then it's not put on the fire. So at least the other food goes on the fire. Salad don't go on the fire. So I won't have the salad. I don't know if it was true or not, but I never had the salad. Every time they would bring the salad, I would just look at it like thinking of the water. So you have to understand, it's not easy. But the lessons you will learn when you will be able to give one envelope to one family. And to see the appreciation of a family, no tears. Know what happened to me. Know why did Allah do this. Everyone is so calm. In the aeroplane, I meet one person coming back from Germany. On the way, I say, where are you going? He said, I'm Syrian. I say, Syrian, like, he said, I'm going home. He said, I ran away when I was 15 years old or 16. Me and my brother ran. He went to Iran, I reached Germany. So when I reached Germany, now I'd like to know, because South Americans also ran away once upon a time. And when they reached South America, there were Arabs who reached South America. Then they had to marry the Christians. And then, after that, there was no deen left. So I want to know, when the Syrians ran away, how's it? He says, I reached there when I was 15 or 16 years old. I started working in the hotels. Then I got money. Then I went to the college. I started studying. Said, while I was studying there, one girl was doing what is called comparative religion studies. They learn comparative religion to show them why Islam is wrong and why Christianity is right. While she's studying this year, she needed some help. So she comes to him. She says, you know Arabic. I need some help in this. He says, I started giving her help. The opposite happened. Where instead of me getting attracted to her, she got attracted to me. Now she wants to get married to me. I say, I got a religion, Islam. She says, I don't think my parents would mind. Imagine one Muslim in a land of kufr. The first time when the Arabs went to South America, Islam was wiped out. They thought the same thing will happen, but when Allah wants, things happen the opposite. Now the girl is attracted to him. He goes, he says that there's no way, I'm a Muslim. Girl's father says, I got no problem with Islam. It's her choice. If she wants to be Muslim, we're very happy. As long as you look after our daughter. Then I said, then. He said, I told my wife when I got married, the niqab, I will not force you into the niqab. It's your choice. He says, 1 year later, my wife went into the niqab. I said, hey, you know, if your wife can come to our country, like, to tell our women who are taking out the niqab. No one gave her doubt. No one. He says, I can tell you, 2 years ago, I was going to Jordan, and we were flying over Syria. As flying over Syria, I got gripped with fear, because something happened in the aeroplane. So normally if something happens and they say that there's going to be an emergency landing in Syria. He said, I just got scared, like if they land in Syria, that's the end for me. They'll pick me up in the aeroplane and they'll know I'm a Syrian who ran. He said, I got gripped. He said, 2 years later, I'm flying over that same area and I'm excited. He says, how the world changes. He wanted to be by the window just to take pictures. I'm going home, I'm going home. He said, in 2 weeks' time, my wife is coming. I will never force her to make hijrat here. It's not fair. He said, but I wanted to see Syria and fall in love with it. And to say she wants to move here. He said, my family is here. Family is here. I asked, what are you going to do in Syria? He said, whatever I learned in Germany, I'm going to use it to build up my family. He said, how Allah made it. These people went to other countries, took the knowledge of that country, and bringing it back to Islam. Even the woman of the country coming back. Even the woman. I met him. In the left we meet a person. He's coming from England. The father is from Turkey. They just met. This is the first holiday. Father is old. He's younger. Asked him like, did you go to your village? He said, no, we're going. We want to see the destruction. We want to rebuild our village. Everyone knows that. Rebuilding. That vision. When Allah wants things to happen, they're not looking for anyone's help. No one's help. But it is our honor in the few years that you got to go and give some help. At least one day, when the army of the Mahdi stands, it might be mine and your wealth that went in training that boy or making him someone. Young children. He gave them sweets. So they asked, our child asked, where are you from? I said, South Africa. I said, where's that? I said, you know Africa? I said, no. I said, you know Africa? Where do you know South Africa? I said, you know Egypt? I said, gee. I said, in the bottom of Egypt. I said, okay. I said, why you came here? Small child. He said, why you came here? I said, he came to like meet you. How are you going to tell you came to give you zakat? He came to meet you. He says, then may Allah reward you. You came from so far. So far. Like a small child, he said, Allah reward you. Then I tell the child, like, okay, you tell me something. All the children, La Israel, La Israel, La Israel. No Israel, no Israel, no Israel. All of them excited, no Israel. Small children, they don't have nothing. They're asking for lollipops. And there in their blood it is. No Israel, no Israel, no Israel. You don't know where you'll have to put your wealth. One person sent a whole amount of zakat. All the money was normally sent already beforehand, before we reached. We didn't want to carry. But one person last minute got. So the thing remained in the pocket. Now it has to be given. But we're looking now. Oh, first we have to sort out whatever we sent. While we're distributing, everyone will get one envelope of $100. Now this person come and say, hey, I got my someone zakat here. Please just give it. I said, you can't give it now. And then one woman just comes, the guard brings her. Small child comes with her. The child's eye is red. The guard is explaining, she's talking, the guard is explaining that she got cancer of the eye. Cancer. I said, hey, where's that person with that money? How much you want to give? I thought you take out, like, you know, you count. Even if it's the guard money, you count. Like, he took that whole pad and he just put it in the guard's hand. One shot. Even that woman got a shock, like, she had a heart attack. She gave it to the man in charge from the government side. Like, count this, like. That man started counting it. He's telling her, relax, relax, we'll get the thing done for this girl. Like, I don't know whatever operation now we have to send her, like. I say, one man's zakat was meant for that girl. To reach that girl, that man would not miss the deadline. He had to give it after the deadline. He had to give it that day. Then that one person carrying it had to forget it for 3 days. And just that moment, 5 minutes before, suddenly he itches. He says, hey, I need to give this, I need that. I say, relax now, now. So long it's sitting in a pocket, he starts itching. That itch was for that girl. One man's zakat, one girl's eye. Even if it's your zakat, to know where it can give, what results. How happy it made me. Imagine the man who's giving that zakat had to see it. You have to take your own wealth. And you must go in these places. You go with your small group. You go with your wife and your children. All this love of a beautiful dunya, you lose it all when you will go to the lands of Sham. You will see Iman, you will see Quran, you will see Deen. And you will see people who got nothing, but will always say, Allah tested others more than us. Walhamdulillah. We got lot. They lost families. But you just see them smiling. For them the word Shahada is in their family. There is Allah's kindnesses. The dars of Iman, they say, is learned in the lands of Iman. The land of Syria, wallah, is a land of Iman. Allah tabarakala ala all of us. When the first opportunity comes, you make your jamaats. My one friend now is going. He came to ask me, I'm going to visit this place, this place, this place, this place. Is there any other places? I say, the way you're making, like, I'm a tour guide. How will he went one safar? Like, my ziyarat was like half a day. I said, what's use visiting? I looked up, I said, hey, I never even know those things, are they? I said, who you found? He said, my father's one contact. I said, very good. I said, what's your journey? He said, we are going to fly Jordan. From Jordan, we're going to go into Aqsa. And then from Aqsa, we want to go into Syria. I said, from Aqsa into Syria, I never know there's a border open there. So when you come back, tell me, like, from Aqsa into Syria. So we're making that journey. So people who are now investigating are finding routes, and this way, that way, you make your investigations. I'm no tour guide. I just went with that group. We saw what we saw. But I can tell you one thing. When we came back, nearly everyone in the group said, there's never been a journey which left so much memories like this journey. So much. Every person who we met was a lesson of Iman. Every driver, the way they talk. The leaders, the small children, the imams in the masjid. My friend went to one small masjid, like we have the small ones next to it. They went to go see something, they saw, they read it. Asr time, they needed to read the Asr, they entered. There was like a Sufi sheikh there. He was sitting. And then one small boy was giving a beautiful khutbah. And the sheikh was listening. So they read the namaz and they asked, like, what's this happening? He said, I'm testing him, his khutbah. Why? Said, you see, he was the one who said before we used to make Ameen for the regime. He said, now the regime is gone. Now we have to work on the minds of people. He says, me every day after Maghrib, if I stand up to give a bayan, even 5 minutes. People who never heard the talks of Deen for so many years, they don't want to hear it. So what thought came to him? That his students, small children, every day one child will prepare a khutbah. And he will help the child. That day the khutbah was on the importance of salah in our lives. My friend taped that boy's khutbah. He sent it to me. What a brilliant Arabic khutbah. So the person said, Maghrib, you're reading here. After Maghrib salah, I told him, you be the imam. After Maghrib salah, everyone sits. And the small child stands up. And they put the mic to him, and the mic goes outside the masjid. So people who are walking on the roads, think of the difference between an old imam giving a bayan, and a small child giving a bayan. When the child gives the bayan, even his father who don't like bayans comes. Even the father who don't like, he's listening. And that boy was so much of confidence. That child becomes a da'i from what a young age. Everyone, every day there's a new child giving a khutbah. Everyone is excited because a new child, hey, he got courage. I said, how Allah inspires people to work. But the small child, they're working on the minds of people. Allah is Allah. When you want something to happen, Syria is the beginning. They said the goal is Al-Aqsa. How far we are from that goal, we don't know. But they have already started a lot of preparation for that goal. May Allah tabarakallah make me and you must also prepare. It's a goal. Until that time, whatever help you can give to the land of Syria, as I told you, they don't need it. We saw them living up the thing without any money. But whatever will go there, it will be our fortune. To end with this last sentence. What made me tell my friends, let's go Syria, is one friend came back from Syria. We were having a meal. So I asked him, how was Syria? I had no intention of going. Madrasa was on. Just to take off like that day, it wasn't going to work. So he just said, you know, we came back from Syria. And one of the leaders said, thank the South Africans. So I told him, like, for what? So he says, remember when we went a couple of years ago? He says, those people who we were giving aid to, remember they told us that their fathers are all dead. Their fathers are all dead. But he said, many of them were not dead. They were fighting. Many of them were fighting. But there was no one to look after the families. Which means like while they were fighting, many of them also knew that our families are being looked after by people from another country. And that's what made it easy for them to continue the fight. That wording, man jahaza ghaziyan, when the man said, they said, thank the South Africans. The effort they put in this country during those days has not gone unnoticed. I said, amazing. Little wealth, how much it does. One friend, when money used to come, he used to prepare the parcels. And then on a motorbike, they used to drive and drop by this house, drop by that house. He showed me the parcels. Nice parcels, little bit oil, little bit rice. Said when money was coming in, then he would give the parcels. This family, that family, how many families? He says, then those months would come where no money would be allowed in. Because it was hard to smuggle money. He says, then me and my wife, just last month we were giving out zakat. The next month we were opening a package of the zakat. And for 1 month we would also be eating that rice with that oil. He said, I was the one giving. And then there would be the times I was taking. So our life went. He says, but not once did I see my wife, my children. Not once did I see them looking at, what's this? Rice? Oil? How do you live on this? That little wani that would go would create one parcel. That one parcel, he said, he's telling me, if you knew the value of that zakat parcel, says, we would understand its value when our money was not come. We would open up that parcel. And for 1 month we would live on that. 1 month. I said, how much that parcel is? He said, oh, 10 pounds. That 10 pounds was one man's 1 month life. He said, I understood the value when my time would come and I would open that parcel. And me and my wife would be eating that rice with the oil. I knew what those people, why they were waiting for it. Little wealth goes a long way, little wealth. There's a chance for all of us to be part of this effort. May Allah tabarak ta'ala make us all part of this. Wa sallallahu ala nabiyyi al-kareem wa ala alihi wa ashabihi ajma'in. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa salatu wa salamu ala sayyidil anbiya'i wal mursaleen. Wa ala alihi wa ashabihi ajma'in. Allahumma rabbana atina fi dunya hasana. وفي الآخرة حسنة وقنا عذاب النار. Allah, in your kindness we beg you. Allah, you have never let us see difficulty. We ask you, never let us see difficulty. Allah, imtihan is taken from the best of your creation. Allah, we know we are not the best. Allah, and we know we cannot manage the imtihans that other people have managed. Allah, we ask you to keep us with izzah. We ask you to keep us in a state of raha. Allah, but we ask you to also give us a share in this great mission. Allah, we ask you that our wealth and our lives can also be used. What is, with afiyah, with izzat, with raha. Allah, we should not be the hypocrites of this ummah. Allah, we should not be the cowards of this ummah. Allah, we should not be the ones who are looking at the train of iman going so far, but we are not getting into the train. Allah, in your kindness, allow us to have a great share in lifting the flag of Islam. Allah, in your kindness, allow us to have a great share in lifting the flag of Islam. Allah, in your kindness, allow our children to have a great share in lifting the flag of Islam. Allah, when victory, we can see it in front of us. Allah, let it not just be a victory which we see and we rejoice. Allah, in your kindness, let us be part of this victory. Allahumma salli ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala ali Sayyidina Muhammad kama sallaita ala Ibrahim وعلى آل إبراهيم إنك حميد مجيد سبحان ربك رب العزة عما يصفون وسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله